ॐ अज्ञान्ति बिनन्दस्य ज्ञानाञ्जनशलाकाय चक्षुर्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरुवे नमः। जय श्रीकृष्णचैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासवी गौरभक्तवृन्द। हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। सो द रेकॉर्डिंग, आई हैव टू डिलीट सम रेकॉर्डिंग्स बिकॉज द स्टोरेज स्पेस इज फुल, आई मीन इट्स अबाउट टू गेट फुल। So anyone who would like to save the recordings can do so within a couple of days. After that, I will delete the oldest recordings. Okay, so 32nd verse. Maam hi partha vyapasritya ye pi shuya papayo naha sri avaishastata sudras te pi yanti param gatin. O son of Pratha, those who take shelter in me, though they may be of low birth, women, Vaishyas, and Sudra can attain the supreme destination. It is clearly, we have covered this one also probably. It's clearly declared here by the Supreme Lord that in devotional service there is no distinction between the lower and higher classes of people. In the material conception of life, there are such divisions, but for person engaged in transcendental devotional service to the Lord, there are not. Everyone is eligible for the supreme destination. In the Bhagavatam, it is stated even the lowest, who are chandalas, can be purified by association with pure devotee. Therefore, devotional service and the guidance of a pure devotee are so strong that there is no discrimination between the lower and higher classes of men. Anyone can take to it. The most simple man taking shelter of the pure devotee can be purified by proper guidance. According to the different modes of material nature, men are classified in the modes of goodness, passion, and ignorance. Brahmana, Kshatriyas, or administrators. Passion and ignorance, Vaishyas or merchants, and the mode of ignorance, Sudras or workers. Those lower than them are called Chandalas, and they are born in sinful families. Generally, the association of those born in sinful families is not accepted by the higher classes. But the process of devotional service is so strong that the pure devotee of the Supreme Lord can enable people of all the lower classes to attain the highest perfection of life. This is possible only when one takes shelter of Krishna. As indicated here by the word Vyapasritya, one has to take shelter completely of Krishna. Then one can become much greater than Jnani and Yogis. Yeah. So, one should try to take complete shelter of the Lord. Then only one can get free from the designations. Otherwise, we have to identify and discriminate according to the principles of Varnashram. A particular varna and particular ashrama, and then we have to act naturally according to the modes of material nature, and then at the same time simultaneously we practice bhakti also. So by that gradually we get purified, and then we come to the Sudra Sattva platform, which is transcendental to the modes of material nature, and then one can get completely free from this varnashram. Okay, so now varnashram is obviously, it's not a limb of devotional service. It can help devotional service. It can facilitate bhakti. And in fact, there are certain elements in varnashram that are also favorable towards bhakti. So we should accept only those elements. But when it becomes an obstacle or it comes as an entrance to bhakti, then it should be rejected. So varnashram is actually a material concept. It is not a spiritual concept. Okay, so the modes of material nature, depending on that, these varna and ashram are designated. So we have to transcend them. Okay, any comment or question?
Okay. No problem.
Yeah, next verse, yeah, Mithu Prabhu.
Okay. Verse 9.33. Kim Pudar Brahmana Punya Bhakya Raja Se Rakata Anityam Sukham Lokam Imam. How much more this is so of the righteous Brahmana, the devotee and the saintly king. Therefore, having come to this temporary miserable world, engaged in loving service and killing. In this material world, there are classifications of people, and after all, this world is not a happy place for anyone. It is very familiar, anitya asukam lokam. This world is temporary and full of misery, not habitable for any gentleman. This world is declared by the Supreme Personality of God to be temporary and full of misery. Some philosophers, especially Mayavadi philosophers, say that this world is false. But we can understand from Bhagavad Gita that the world is not false, it is temporary. This is different because there is a difference between temporary and false. This world is temporary, but there is another world which is eternal. This world is miserable, but the other world is eternal and blissful. Arjuna was born in a saintly royal family. To him also the Lord says, take to my devotional service and come quickly back to God, back home. No one should remain in this temporary world, full as it is with misery. Everyone should attach himself to the bosom of the Supreme Personality of Godhead so that he can be eternally happy. Devotional service of the Supreme Lord is the only process by which all problems of all classes of man can be solved. Everyone that should therefore take to Krishna consciousness and make his life for that. Hare Krishna.
Yeah. So this world, so we know that there is the upper planetary system, lower planetary system, and then we have the Bhumandala. So that is actually the middle planetary system. And in this Bhumandala, or in Bharatvarsha, we have this, we can use our free will, and we can actually decide to go above or go below. Okay. So, see, that is the reason in the Bharatvarsha, in the material Bhumandala, that's the place where you will find that the happiness and distress is kind of balanced. If you go to the Swargloka, then you will find a lot of happiness, a lot of pleasure. And generally you will find people in the mode of goodness who go there. And if you go to the lower planetary system, then you will find there are people, there are living entities in the lower planetary system who also enjoy. But their enjoyment is in the mode of ignorance. So only in Bharatvarsha, we get this opportunity to go above or go below, depending on our karma. Okay. And another thing is, one can get only liberation only when they come to Bharatvarsha. Haribol? Someone is speaking, I think. Okay. Are you all able to hear me? Hare Krishna.
Sir, but there was a disturbance earlier.
Huh?
Now we can hear.
Okay, so whatever I spoke, were you able to hear?
Yes, Abhijit.
Yes, Abhijit.
Okay. Yeah, so now, see, another thing is that even, I don't know how many of you have seen the structure of the universe according to the Vedic cosmology. So you know, you will actually realize that there is a Bhumandala which is in the form of a disc shape. This is how they have shown Bhumandala. And then in between there is Mount Subaru. And then, you know, we have the upper planetary system right up to Satyaloka. And then below we have, you know, all these lower planetary systems, Sutal, all these Atal, Talatal, and all these planets we have. In the Bhumandala, which is like a big disk, in the center of that, as we know, is Sumeru Mountain. And the area surrounding Sumeru Mountain is called Jambudvip. In that Jambudvip, there are 9 varshas, out of which 1 varsha is Bharat Varsha. Now, in other varshas, interestingly, it is very interesting to know that in other varshas, you know, it's similar to that of heavenly planet. All these other varshas, it is similar to heavenly planet, which means that if you perform pious activity in Bharat Varsha, then you can be promoted in all these other different varshas with a lifespan of 10,000 years and with a feeling of as if you are present in Trita Yuga. Okay, so there also you enjoy, but that kind of enjoyment is comparatively lesser than Swarg Loka. And another thing is that the time, you know, the movement of the sun and the moon, and the time changes, this is all happening in our Bharatvarsha only. Because, and in the Bharatvarsha only, we have Satyuga, Trita Yuga, Dwapar Yuga, and Kaliyuga. But other Varshas, we don't have the three other Yugas. We have only one Trita. I mean, it's not even actually Trita Yuga, but because there is a lifespan of 10,000 years for the living entities there, so that's why they experience conditions similar to that of Trita Yuga. So that's why we say that, well, all of them experience only Trita Yuga. There is no Satyug for them, there is no Kaliyug, there is no Dwaparyug for them. But only in the southernmost section of that Jambudeep, which is Bharatvarsh, all these changes are happening. So so actually they are experiencing some kind of enjoyment in these Varshas, but ultimately they cannot get liberation. And then, so Jambudipa is also one of the islands surrounding Mount Meru. And then Mount Meru is in the center, which is like a pole, vertical pole. And above Jambudipa or above Bhumandala, you know, we have the upper planetary systems. So if you are very pious, then you go to Swarg Loka. Okay. Even from Swarg Loka also, those who are about to finish their karma, about they're all pious karma, they come down to these Varshas, and from these Varshas they come to Bharat Varsha. And again from Bharat Varsha they decide according to their free will where they would like to go, down, up or below, or get liberated. Okay. Again, in lower planetary system also the same thing happens. If you are in the lower planetary system, you are enjoying in the mode of goodness, in the mode of ignorance. And in the upper planetary system, in the mode of goodness. In the Bhumandala or in the Bharat Varsha, you are enjoying the mode of passion. Okay, so there is equal distress, equal happiness. Like that, you can say, not exactly, you can say, you know, 50-50%, but it is balanced. So, and what is the reason for that? Can anyone guess? Why do we have balanced amount of pleasure and pain in this Bharat Varsha?
Is it probably because it's the middle planetary system?
It is what? Middle.
A middle,
okay.
Planetary system.
Yeah, okay. That is logical. But then, why it is designed like that? It is this answer is also connected to what I said earlier, that what is the uniqueness and speciality of Bharat Varsha, which is not found in other Varshas nor in the lower and upper planetary system. So enjoyment is there, right? As we discussed, that the enjoyments are always there in upper lower planetary system and in other Varshas. But what is the uniqueness about Bharat Varsha?
Because of the balance between the happiness and the distress, it gives the opportunity for the jivas to worship and get elevated out of the material world.
Yes, that's right. So, see, as I said earlier, that the uniqueness of Bharat Varsha is that you can get liberated from here. Okay. And this liberation can only happen when you are balanced in your happiness and distress. Like, you know, for example, if you are too much happy, then there is very little scope of taking to Krishna consciousness or thinking about liberation. And if you are too much miserable, then you are in too much pain to think about God, right? Because in that painful condition, you cannot think of anything else. But you'll immediately, you know, you just want immediate cure for your suffering condition. So, if you have too much pain and if you have too much extreme pain and pleasure, someone will not become Krishna conscious. But when it's a balanced approach, then people actually realize that there is. We are all looking for pleasure, but actually there is no pleasure in the material world. There is a lot of distress and suffering. And so, you know, we start realizing that, well, you know, we are not the bodies, we are the spirit soul, we should render devotional service to the Lord. But for rendering devotional service to the Lord also, you should have a suitable and healthy body. Otherwise, you cannot do that. Otherwise, you'll be frustrated. You'll be miserable. So, obviously, a devotee, because we are sadhakas, we cannot tolerate that much suffering. Right? And that's why it is balanced. So, you see, you can actually contemplate and realize that whatever the Vedic scriptures are saying, everything has a meaning, everything has, you know, it's so logical. You know, it's right in the center, you know, that balanced approach means in the center. Then too much extreme means either you are up or you are below, like that. So the entire Vedic cosmology is designed like that. There is, you know, particular reasoning for each and everything. How the, you know, how the entire Bhumandala is divided into seven dvipas and, you know, oceans and, you know, and then how everything is rotating, revolving. There is some reason for that. You'll find some reason for, you know, each and everything. So it's all logical. Okay, so in this life, we have this opportunity to go back to Godhead. I mean, in this Bharat Varsha. Plus, obviously, as we have discussed earlier so many times, that especially because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appears, that's another feather to the cap. Okay, and then more on that is, you know, Srila Prabhupada's appearance. So we have taken birth after Prabhupada's appearance, like that. Okay, so any comment or question? Okay, next. Jigna Mataji, would you like to read? Very, very important verse and the last verse of Bhagavad Gita. 9th chapter.
Yes. Hare Krishna, Prabhu. 34. Verse number 34, chapter 9. Manmanamav matvattu madhyaji mam namaskuru mame vaishyasi yuktaitvam atmanama matparayanaha. Engage your mind always in thinking of me, because my devotee offer obeisances to me and worship me. Being completely absorbed in me, surely you will come to me. Purpose. In this verse, it is clearly indicated that Krishna consciousness is the only means of being delivered from clutches of this contaminated material world. Sometimes, unscrupulous commentators distort the meaning of what is clearly stated here, that all devotional service should be offered to the Supreme Personality of the Godhead, Krishna. Unfortunately, unscrupulous commentators divert the mind of the reader to that which is not at all feasible. Such commentators do not know that there is no difference between Krishna's mind and Krishna. Krishna is not an ordinary human being. He is absolute truth. His body, his mind, and he himself are one and absolute. It is stated in the Kurma Purana, as it is quoted by Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami in his Anubhasya comments on the Chaitanya Charitamrita, 5th chapter, Adi Lila, verses 41 to 48. Dehi dehi vibhedo yam nishvari vidyate kvachit. This means that there is no difference in Krishna, the Supreme Lord, between himself and his body. But because the commentators do not know the science of Krishna, they hide Krishna and divide his personality from his mind or from his body. Although this is sheer ignorance of the science of Krishna, some men make profit out of misleading people. There are some who are demoniac. They also think of Krishna, but enviously, just like King Kamsa, Krishna's uncle. He was also thinking of Krishna always, but he thought of Krishna as his enemy. He was always in anxiety, wondering when Krishna would come to kill him. That kind of thinking will not help us. One should be thinking of Krishna in devotional love, that is bhakti. One should cultivate the knowledge of Krishna continuously. What is that favorable cultivation? It is to learn from the bona fide teacher. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of the Godhead, and we have several times explained that his body is not material, but it is eternal, blissful knowledge. This kind of talk about Krishna will help one become a devotee. Understanding Krishna otherwise from the wrong source will prove fruitless. One who therefore engages his mind in the eternal form, the primal form of the Krishna, with conviction in his heart that Krishna is the Supreme, he should engage himself in worship. There are hundreds of thousands of temples in India for the worship of Krishna, and devotional service is practiced. When such practice is made, one has to offer obeisances to Krishna. One should lower his head before deity and engage his mind, his body, his activities, everything. That will make one fully absorbed in Krishna without deviation. This will help one transfer to Krishna Loka. One should not be deviated by unscrupulous commentators. One must engage in the 9 different processes of the devotional service, beginning with the hearing and chanting about Krishna. Pure devotional service is the highest achievement of human society. The 7th and 8th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita have explained pure devotional service to the Lord that it's free from speculative knowledge, mystic yoga, and furtive activity. Those who are not purely sanctified may be attracted by different features of the Lord like the impersonal Brahma Jyoti and localized Paramatma, but the pure devotee directly takes to the service of the Supreme Lord. There is a beautiful poem about Krishna in which it is clearly stated that any person who is engaged in the worship of demigods is most unintelligent and cannot achieve at any time the supreme award of Krishna. The devotee in the beginning may sometimes fall from the standard, but still he should be considered superior to all other philosophers and yogis. One should always engage in the Krishna consciousness to be understood to be perfectly saintly person. His accidental non-devotional activities will diminish, and he will still be situated without any doubt in complete perfection. The pure devotee has no actual chance to fall down because the Supreme Godhead personally takes care of his pure devotees. Therefore, the intelligent person should take directly to the process of Krishna consciousness and happily live in this material world. He will eventually receive the supreme award of Krishna. Thus, and the Bhaktivedanta purport to the 9th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavad Gita in the matter of the most confidential knowledge. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Oh, good. So we have finished the 9th chapter finally. Okay, any comment, question about this verse or the chapter? Okay, no questions. Now, why this chapter is called the most confidential knowledge? Any guess, any answer? Haribol, are you able to hear?
Yes, Haribol.
So what are you thinking? Any guess?
Because Krishna is directly started talking about Bhakti Yoga.
So in the first word itself, in the purport, Prabhupada explained that this is the most confidential knowledge because Krishna is revealing the supremacy of Bhakti Yoga. Okay, and anything else? And obviously Krishna says that you are not envious of me. That's why I shall impart to you this most confidential knowledge and realization. Okay, so now, let me read some verses from this chapter. And then at the end I will explain, what is the hidden meaning of this most confidential knowledge. So I'm reading 9.14, always chanting my glories, endeavoring with great determination, going down before me, these great souls perpetually worshiping with devotion. Satram Gita Yantamam Yatantas Chadrana Tata Namasintascha mam bhaktya nitya yukta upasate. This is one verse. Then Ananyas chintayanto mam yejana parupashate tesam nityadhyuktanam yogakshemam mahamiyam. But those who always worship me with exclusive devotion, meditating on my transcendental form, to them I carry what they lack and preserve what they have. Okay, 22. Then Nine point twenty-seven. Whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer or give away, and whatever austerities you perform, do that, O son of Kunti, as an offering to me.
As
son of Pitha, those who take shelter in me, so they be of lower birth. Women, Vaishyas, merchants, Sudras can attain the supreme destination. And the last verse, Man Mana Bhava Bhaktya Madhya Jimam Namaskaru. There is also a similar verse in the Bhagavad Gita, if you all remember. Man mana bhava mad bhakta madhyaji mam namaskaru mam eva shasi satyam te pratijane priyosi me. Do you remember that?
It's chapter number 18.
Yeah, so chapter 18 is basically the essence of whatever Krishna is speaking. Okay. Now, why did I read these verses? Because in all these verses, there is a common thing. And what is the common thing? Can anyone find out what is the common factor in all these verses?
Okay. Well, Krishna is directly instructing about the devotees, how they can reach him.
Okay. Anything else? I think it probably might be difficult to guess. So, but if any devotee would like to try, then they can. Mom. That's a common thing, right? So, me, do it for me, offer it to me, think of me, surrender to me, remember me. Okay, so now, and specifically, so the, you know, Jiva Goswami says that, remember all these me, basically Krishna is saying that me means the transcendental form that you are seeing as I am, not in the form of Vishnu, not in the form of, you know, any other form, not in the form of Vara, Narasimha, Vamana, any other form, but only me. Exclusive devotion for me. Worship my transcendental form as I am. Okay. So the meaning is, this is most confidential knowledge, because obviously devotional service is the most confidential part. But devotional service to the Lord can be for different incarnations of the Lord also, including Vishnu avatars and Rama avatar also. But here, the most confidential aspect is, Krishna is actually telling Arjuna that you worship me in my own transcendental form, as I am, not any other form. If you devote your whatever devotion you have, it, you know, you exclusive devotion should be for me only, you know, in this transcendental form. So basically, Krishna is revealing to Arjuna the most secret worship. And the most secret worship is not just about devotional service, but devotional service to Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, not as any other avatars, not as Vishnu. Okay, so this is the most confidential knowledge. Here it is revealed in this chapter. That's why it is called the most confidential knowledge. So, does this make sense? Any question or comment about this? So basically, Krishna is encouraging that the devotees should worship only Krishna as he is, original Krishna. No, because we know that there are expansions of Krishna also. Like, you know, Vasudev Sankarshan, Pradyumani, all these are expansions of Krishna. And then we have Ram Avatar, then we have the Purusha Avatar, then we have the Leela Avatars, then we have the Guna Avatars. So Krishna is not encouraging Arjuna to worship all these forms. He is actually giving the highest mode of method of worship. Okay? Because when you worship the highest form of the Lord, it gives the highest result. So like for example, you know, it is mentioned in the Shastra that if you chant the names of the demigods, the name of the demigods are basically the secondary names, okay? And they are all connected, dependent on the names of Lord Vishnu or Krishna. But even if you consider the primary names of the Lord, like Rama, Narasimha, Vara, all these names are also, it bestows less result compared to chanting of Krishna's holy name. So in the Vishnu Sahasranam, at the conclusion, we know that one name of Vishnu, one name of Ram is equivalent to what? How many names of Vishnu? One name of Ram. 1,000. 1,000 names of Vishnu. And then one name of Krishna is equivalent to how many names of Ram?
Three.
Exactly. Right? So this is the conclusion. And that is the reason when you chant the name of Lord Ramchandra, when you chant the name of any other incarnation of Krishna, then the result that you get is less than you chant Krishna's holy name. So Krishna's holy name is the most powerful and it is the supreme. It gives the supreme benediction, bestows the supreme mercy. And the devotion that you attain from chanting Krishna's name is super excellent. Because Krishna's, everything connected to Krishna, see, understand one thing, that Krishna is reservoir of all the rasas. You will not find this anywhere else in any of the incarnations. Even with Lord Ramchandra, the maximum the rasa that can go is up to Sakya Bhav. But that is also extremely rare and it is in the Aishwarya Bhav. Okay, and it cannot go beyond that. Any living entity, they cannot attain beyond Sakya Ras with Lord Ramchandra. Generally, it is Dasya only, but in some very extreme or rare case, it is Sakya, which is also mixed with knowledge of opulence of the Lord. But with Krishna, you can actually mix all the rasas. You know, a devotee can actually worship the Lord in any kind of rasa, and it goes up to conjugal swaki and parikya bhav with the Lord, madhurya bhav, right? So with Krishna, all these rasas exist, but it cannot exist with other incarnation of the Lord. And that's why the prema that the devotee gets by worshipping Krishna is of superior nature. Okay, it is the most superior form of, and obviously we know that there are divisions. If you worship Dwarkadish Krishna, if you worship Mathuradish Krishna, and if you worship Shyam Sundar Krishna, then obviously accordingly you get a corresponding intensity of prema. So the most highest is if you worship the Shyam Sundar form of Krishna in Vrindavan, then you get the most exalted type of love. Okay, so we know that there is Godhead in the spiritual world. There is God in the spiritual world. But even amongst the Godhead also, there are divisions. And
it's, you know, in one sense it is all like equal, but at the same time there is also discrimination. So that's the reason, you know, Madhurya Ras is also including all the lower rasas. Vatsala Ras is including other three rasas, like that. Okay, so every devotee is satisfied in their loving relationship with the Lord. But at the same time, there is also discrimination in the intensity of the love. Okay, so any comment or question on this? Does this make sense to everyone?
Prabhu, can you repeat about the that you mentioned that Shyama Sundar in the Vrindavan is the highest, so that is a Madhurya Bhav, Prabhuji?
See, Madhurya Bhav in general is the highest among all the rasas, and specifically with Krishna in the spiritual world also, in Vrindavan, Madhurya Bhav is the highest form of worship. And below that is Vatsalya, below that is Satya, below that is Dasya, and the Shantaras is the last.
Okay.
So Madhurya Ras, yeah, so Madhurya Ras is highest because it's conjugal loving relationship with the Lord. So it includes all the other rasas also. And at the same time, the intensity of the ras is also the strongest. It is the maximum. So the feelings of love for Krishna is the maximum in Madhurya Ras.
Yeah, but you mentioned about the Dwarkadis and Mathura, Mathura,
yeah.
Krishna.
Yeah, so these are, yeah, so Mathura Krishna, Dwarka Krishna, they are expansions of the original Vrindavan form of Krishna, because it is mentioned that the Lord never takes one step out of Vrindavan. Okay, so, but at the same time we see that in the Leela, Krishna does go from Vrindavan to Mathura and then from Mathura to Dwarka. But actually Krishna is always present in Vrindavan, he becomes a Prakat. Then he leaves for Mathura and Dwarka. And in Mathura and Dwarka, he becomes Prakat. So, actually, the Lord stays in Vrindavan, but who goes in Mathura and Dwarka? His expansions. The Vasudeva expansion of Krishna goes to Mathura and Dwarka. Okay, so now, Mathura and Dwarka Krishna is different from Vrindavan Krishna because he gets covered with Aishwarya. There is Aishwarya in Mathura and Dwarka. There is opulence and there is, you know, because there Krishna is not wearing peacock feather. He's not wearing, I mean, even if he has peacock feather, but he's wearing mukut, he's wearing, you know, the dress of a warrior, and then he's wearing so many ornaments. So he's covered with lot of awe and reverence in Mathura and Dwarka. So there is awe and reverence in Mathura, there is greater awe and reverence in Dwarka, and then after that Lord Ramchandra's abode comes, so there is greater awe and reverence in Ayodhya compared to Dwarka, and then there is much more greater awe and reverence in Vaikuntha compared to Ayodhya. So because it is filled with awe and reverence, the intensity of the love is actually restricted. It is suppressed. Because you start feeling more and more about the Lord as being your master rather than your intimate relative or your intimate family member. Okay, that family mood, that intimacy mood happens only in Vrindavan. But as we go down, like Mathura, Dwarka, and then Ayodhya, and then Vaikuntha, the feeling of awe and reverence will start increasing. So, like, it is like, you know, visiting, like, you know, for example, your son, he's a billionaire and he's one of the richest person in the world. So now, if you go to meet him in the office, but in the office is very formal, he's very professional. So he won't deal with you in the same way that you treat him in the house, right? In the house, it's very intimate. You can tell anything to your son can tell anything to you. But in the office, when you go, you cannot behave like that, right? It's a different mood. So similarly, Lord in Mathura and Dwarka, because he's covered by opulence, he's because, you know, generally, he's more inclined for establishing dharma outside of Mathura Vrindavan in the material realm. In the spiritual realm, he is more covered by Aishwarya Gyan, which means that devotees see him as Lord. Okay, now Vrajvasi also know that Krishna is actually the Lord. Vrindavan Krishna is the Lord. But they immediately forget about it because their relationship of, whatever, like as a friend or as a lover or as a son, you know, that is more prominent compared to them knowing the fact that he is God. So that dominates and it covers all other aspect of his, Godhead personality. So he is completely, by his Yogmaya potency, Krishna will completely cover the knowledge of the Vrajvasis. Like, you know, we have example when Mother Yashoda, so she saw the entire universe in Krishna's mouth. That time, for a moment, she felt that, well, you know, who is he? She was bewildered. So she started thinking that, is my son the Supreme Godhead? But then Krishna used his Yogmaya potency, covered her, and then immediately she realized, whoever he may be, he is my son. So that is very prominent in Vraj. But in Mathura and Dwarka, the feeling of Krishna's supremacy and his lordship is, it starts becoming more prominent. Okay, in Vaikuntha, it is the greatest. Like that. So, is this clear, Madhavi, now?
Prabhuji, one question. I understand what you're talking about. More and more awe and reverence are separating him again away from the devotees, and the intimacy start deluding. So, I understand that. So, In that context, the question is, if, let's say, the Madhuri Ras in Goloka Ram, and Madhuri Ras, as you go down from Mathura to Dwarka to Ayodhya to Vraja, how can you distinguish the joy and the degradation of Madhuri Ras as you go down, from Goloka to all the way down to Vaikuntha?
See, actually, first of all, when we talk about the jivas, because you know the jivas are actually the marginal potency of the Lord, and we talk about liberation for the jivas, because the Nitya Siddhas, associate of the Lord, they are already in the spiritual world. And as I said earlier, that when you talk about Madhurya Ras, then Madhurya Ras exists only for Krishna in Goloka. It does not exist for Lord Ramchandra. It does not exist for Vishnu. As I said, that, you know, for Lord Ramchandra also, one can maximum go up to Sakya Bhav. One cannot go, because as we all know, that Ramchandra is Ek Patni Vrat he has taken. So he cannot accept any other wives. And that's why one cannot have conjugal relationship with Lord Ramchandra. So if you see, in the pastimes of Lord Ramchandra, wherever Lord Ramchandra went, Ayodhya, Mithila, or the Dandakaranya forest, all the sages, all the wives of demigods, all the wives of the, you know, respective citizens, they saw Lord Ramchandra, got attracted to him, and they developed a desire to attain him as a husband. But because he had taken this vow, he could not fulfill their desire. But obviously, at the same time, he gave them a benediction that when I come in the next yuga, then I will accept all of you as Krishna's, you know, wives or, you know, gopis or whatever it is. So in the next yuga, they all came in Krishna Leela, and then Krishna accepted all of them. So now, this Madhurya Ras, it exists only with Krishna. It cannot exist with any other form of Godhead. Okay. Another thing is that when we talk about Radha and Krishna, so Radharani, just as Krishna as Shyam Sundar form, is the highest, the topmost of all other forms, and it is the most complete form. So similarly, Srimati Radharani is also the most complete personality of Goddess in Vrindavan. Okay. Now, she also expands in Mathura and Dwarka as she expands in the form of Satyabhama. So Rukmini, Satyabhama, they are all expansion of Radharani, because Chandravali and the other gopis, they are all expansion of Radharani. And their expansions, you know, they come in Mathura and Dwarka. And their expansions come in Vaikuntha. Okay, so what is happening is, these are all Shakti Tattvas. When we talk about Madhurya Ras in Ram, Lord Ramchandra's abode, or in Vaikunthas, these are all Shakti Tattvas. They are expansions of Srimati Radharani in the form of Dwarka Mahishis and in the form of Lakshmis in the Vaikuntha. Okay. So this is how actually, and obviously, you know, the intensity of the love is definitely lower. Okay, because the forms are themselves inferior to Krishna's form. So obviously the intensity of Lakshmi and Dwarka Mahishi, they have the love that they have for Krishna, is definitely inferior to the love that Radharani and the gopis have for Shyam Sundar Krishna in Vrindavan. Right? And that is because it is covered by Aishwarya Gyan. It is covered by awe and reverence in all these other places. So, is this clear, Prabhu?
Yes, sir. You said Rukmani ji and other wife, the name I forgot, they remain as an expansion of Radharani in Dwarka and Mathura, right?
Yeah.
So still they can have the conjugate love for Krishna in Dwarka and Mathura, but less than the intensity that they have in as a gopi or Radharani form in Goloka.
Yeah, so that is inferior. You can say that, you know, they are covered. They are more covered in their intimate relationship with the Lord. So because they start seeing the Lord as their master rather than seeing him as a, you know, see, even in Vrindavan also, like there are some who worship Krishna in Parakiya Bhav, and there are some who worship Krishna in Swakiya Bhav. So the love of Parakiya Ras is actually greater than Swakiya Ras in Vrindavan also. So even in Vrindavan we have some divisions, but that's a detail and it's a bit complicated to understand. So I'm not sharing all these things, but the highest form of love is expressed or it is manifested when there is no feeling of reverence or awe and reverence. There is only intimacy, the love. Okay. So that's how.
Yeah.
Vaikuntha also the same thing. As I said, that the Dwarka Mahishis, they expand into Vaikuntha Lakshmis. So their love for Lord is also most covered. So there is like more cover, more cover and most covered, like that. So in Mathura and Dwarka it is more covered, and it is in Vaikuntha it is most covered, like that. Like, so the degree of covering increases as we go from Goloka to Vaikunthas. Okay, so their love is covered, and because of that the intensity is not great. Now see, do you remember this example, or if you have heard about this pastime where Narad Muni is actually testing the love of the gopis and that of the Dwarka Mahishis. So then one time, you know, Krishna, see, Narad Muni is actually kind of bewildered that why Krishna is only chanting the name of the gopis and Shrimati Radharani. And then so he goes there and then he wants to find out what is happening. So Krishna is understanding the mind of Narad Muni. So then he does a pastime. And in that pastime, Krishna gets headache. And then when he gets headache, then Narad Muni goes and then he says, okay, so now, you know, you go to the Dwarka Mahishi and ask for their dust of the feet, because that is my medicine in order to cure my headache. So then Narad Muni goes and he goes to Dwarka Mahishi and he says that, you know, the Lord is having a headache. All of you please collect the dust of your feet and give it to me so that I can apply on the head of the Lord. And then all the Mahishis, they are very much, you know, like completely taken aback, because they cannot imagine giving their dust to Krishna. And they all start thinking that how can we give dust to the Krishna, the Lord, and for this we have to go to hell. So they don't give their dust to the Lord. But then Krishna asks Narad Muni that go to the gopis and Radharani in Vrindavan and ask them. And then as soon as Narada says that, you know, he has a headache and this dust can cure his headache, then all the gopis, without thinking anything, immediately they start collecting the dust and they give the dust to Narad Muni. And then Narad Muni says that, do you know what is the consequence of giving your dust to Krishna? That you go to hell. And then the gopis say that even if for a single moment, if our dust can relieve Krishna, the dust that we have given, if that will relieve the headache of Krishna even for a single moment, we are eternally willing to go to hell. So that is the love. So he realizes that the gopis have the highest love for Krishna. Okay, that's why Krishna is always chanting the name of gopis. Now, even when Krishna is in Vrindavan, in Mathura and Dwarka, you see, he is always remembering and thinking about the Vrajvasis all the time, especially the gopis. See, that's the reason even in the Bhagavad Gita also, there are certain verses, the Acharyas comment, that like, for example, there is one verse which says, Krishna says to Arjuna, that a sage, by virtue of its knowledge, sees in everyone with equal vision. He sees equally all living entities. Okay, and if you remember, you know, in the Bhagavad Gita, there is a painting where, you know, this verse, corresponding painting is there, and where Prabhupada has shown that each and every living entity has Paramatma in their hearts. So this is called equal vision. That, you know, when a devotee sees, a sadhu sees, he sees all the living entities with the equal vision, thinking that the Paramatma is present in everyone's heart. But the Acharya say that at this particular moment, when why Krishna spoke this verse, because he was thinking of the gopis. And he was seeing gopi everywhere. And when he was seeing gopis everywhere, so that actually inspired him to speak this verse. And, you know, so that Arjuna could also see through that vision. That, you know, you have to see each and every entity with equal vision, like that. So this is what, you know, the Acharyas, they give revelations about it. And wherever Krishna goes there, he's always thinking about the Vrajvasis. He always wants to go back to Vraj. That is his mood. Because he is most complete in Vraj. Most complete. He is complete in Mathura, in Dwarka. He is more complete in Mathura. And then he is most complete in Vraj. Okay. Because he experiences the highest intensity of love in Vraj. Right? And then Krishna also says, right, that as you surrender to me, I will reward you accordingly. So the more intense is the love for the Lord, the more the Lord hankers for your service, and he remembers you with that intensity. So is this clear now?
Yes, Ravi.
Yeah. Okay. Any other devotee? Okay, so with this, we have finished the 9th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. And now we know that what is the most confidential part of this chapter. Okay? Okay, so let us start with 10th chapter. Okay, so who would like to read now? Angel Madhuri?
भूय एव महाभा
हरे कृष्ण हरे कृष्ण एंजल माताजी यू आर देयर Very good. Can you all hear us?
Yes, we can.
You can hear, but I'm not able to hear.
We can hear you, but nobody else.
Yeah, so I think it was Angel Mother who started reading the verse. Maybe she...
Just like as soon as she got dropped.
Yeah, maybe. Oh, okay. Sudama Madhuri, are you there?
Yes, Prabhu.
Yeah, 10.1.
Shri Bhagavan Uvacha, Voya Eva Mahabaho, Sunome Paramam Vaja, Yate Aham Priyamanaya, Vakshyami Hidakamaya. Translation. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, listen again, O mighty Arjuna, because you are my dear friend, for your benefit, I shall speak to you further, giving knowledge that is better than what I have already explained. Purport. The word Bhagavan is explained thus by Parashara Muni, one who is full in six opulences, who has full strength, full fame, wealth, knowledge, beauty, and renunciation, is Bhagavan, or the Supreme Personality of Godhead. While Krishna was present on this earth, he displayed all six opulences. Therefore, great sages like Parashara Muni have all accepted Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now, Krishna is instructing Arjuna in more confidential knowledge of his opulences and his work. Previously, beginning with 7th chapter, the Lord has already explained his different energies and how they are acting. Now, in this chapter, he explains his specific opulences to Arjuna. In the previous chapter, he has clearly explained his different energies to establish devotion in firm convention. Again, in this chapter, he tells Arjuna about his manifestation and various opulences. The more one hears about the Supreme God, the more one becomes fixed in devotional service. One should always hear about the Lord in the association of devotees. That will enhance one's devotional service. Discourses in the society of devotees can take place only among those who are really anxious to be in Krishna conscious. Others cannot take part in such discourses. The Lord clearly tells Arjuna that because Arjuna is very dear to him, for his benefit, such discourses are taking place.
Okay, yeah. So here now the Lord is going to start talking about the opulences, opulence of the Absolute. Okay. Yeah, okay. Any comment or question? Okay, next. Angel Mataji, are you there?
Yes, Prabhuji.
Okay, yeah, second verse.
Name vidhu suragana prabhavam na maharsaya aham adirhi devanam maharshinam cha sarvasa. Neither the host of demigods nor the great sages know my origin or opulences. For in every respect, I am the source of the demigods and sages. Perfect. As stated in the Brahma Samhita, Lord Krishna is the Supreme Lord. No one is greater than him. He is the cause of all causes. Here it is also stated by the Lord personally that he is the cause of all the demigods and sages. Even the demigods and great sages cannot understand Krishna. They can understand neither his name nor his personality. So what is the position of the so-called scholars of this tiny planet? No one can understand why this Supreme God comes to earth as an ordinary human being and executes such wonderful, uncommon activities. One should know then that scholarship is not the qualification necessary to understand Krishna. Even the demigods and the great sages have tried to understand Krishna by their mental speculation, and they have failed to do so. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, also it is clearly stated that even the demigods are not able to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They can speculate to the limits of their imperfect senses and can reach the opposite conclusion of impersonalism, of something not manifested by these three qualities of material nature. Or they can imagine something by mental speculation. But it is not possible to understand Krishna by such foolish speculation. Here the Lord indirectly says that if anyone wants to know the Absolute Truth, here I am present as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I am the Supreme. One should know this. Although one cannot understand the inconceivable Lord who is personally present, he nonetheless exists. We can actually understand Krishna who is eternal, full of bliss and knowledge, simply by studying his words in Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. The conception of God as some ruling power or as the impersonal Brahman can be reached by persons who are in the inferior energy of the Lord. But the personality of God cannot be conceived unless one is in the transcendental position. Because most men cannot understand Krishna in his actual situation, out of his causeless mercy, he descends to show favor to such speculators. Yet, despite the Supreme Lord's uncommon activities, these speculators, due to contamination in the material energy, still think that the impersonal Brahman is the Supreme. Only the devotees who are fully surrendered unto the Supreme Lord can understand by the grace of the Supreme Personality that He is Krishna. The devotees of the Lord do not bother about the impersonal Brahman conception of God. Their faith and devotion bring them to surrender immediately unto the Supreme Lord. And out of the causeless mercy of Krishna, they can understand Krishna. No one else can understand Him. So even great sages agree. What is Atma? What is Supreme? It is He whom we have to worship.
Okay. Now, how many tattvas? Like in the context of Godhead, how many tattvas are there? There is what? Vishnu Tattva. Then?
Shiva Tattva.
Shiva Tattva. Then?
Shakti Tattva.
Shakti Tattva. Then? Jiva Tattva.
Jiva Tattva.
And then there is? The Jada Tattva. Jada Tattva means dull matter, unconscious. So we know about like Vishnu Tattva. What about Shiva Tattva? So Shiva Tattva is it is explained by the Acharya that it is difficult to understand. It is complex. And similarly, Guru Tattva is also very difficult to understand. That is also very complex. Okay. So why it is like that? Anyone knows why Guru Tattva and Shiva Tattva, they are complex to understand? Okay. So now Brahma, who is Brahma? Which Tattva?
Jiva Tattva.
Okay. So, what is the problem with Jiva Tattva? What is the problem?
It's okay. Qualitatively same with the Lord, but quantitatively minuscule.
Yeah, okay. But what is the problem with Jiva Tattvas? So, there are how many defects of a Jiva?
Four defects of him.
Yes, right. So basically it means that the Jiva can get into illusion and the Jiva can also make mistake. Okay, so now what is the what is Shiva Tattva? Anyone knows? How do you define Shiva Tattva?
Is it Sadashiv in the spiritual and Shambhu in the material?
No. Sadashiv in the spiritual world is Vishnu Tattva. So who is the Shiva Tattva? Come on. Who is the Shiva Tattva? This is not so difficult. Actually, Prabhuji just said about Shiva Tattva.
The Vishnu's expansion is a Sadashiv in the spiritual world. And the same Tattva when come to the material world, it is a Shambhu.
Yeah. So Sadashiva in the spiritual world is a Vishnu Tattva and his expansion in the material world becomes Shiva Tattva. So now this Shiva Tattva, so how does it become a Shiva Tattva? What is the analogy?
in terms of what only?
How do you explain Shiva Tattva? If someone will ask you, what is Shiva Tattva? How will you explain?
Like milk and care?
Huh?
Like milk and curd?
Yeah, like conduct. Milk and curd or milk and yogurt. So if you churn milk, you will get yogurt. And if you churn yogurt, you cannot get milk. Okay. So when you... This is according to Brahma Samhita. So the milk is basically Vishnu Tattva. And when the Vishnu Tattva is churned or when the Vishnu Tattva comes in contact with the gunas in the material world, especially in the tamoguna, then he takes the role of a Shiv Tattva or assumes the position of Shiv Tattva. So now this Shiv Tattva is basically neither Vishnu nor a Jiva. It is in between. Okay, and that is the reason it is complex or complicated to understand this Shiv Tattva, because this Shiv Tattva, in certain occasions, certain circumstances, he behaves as if he is affected by the gunas. And in certain situations, he will behave as if he is completely unaffected by the gunas. Okay, so there are pastimes in the Bhagavatam which actually mentions about this, that Lord Shiva, see, now Lord Shiva is one of the Mahajans also. We know that. There are 12 Mahajans, 12 Acharyas, you can say, or Vaishnava Acharyas or 12 Mahajans, and Lord Shiva, Bali Maharaj, then Kumaras, Narad Muni, Brahma. These are all different Mahajans. Then Bhishma Pitama is also one of the Mahajans. So Mahajans are the one who are pure devotees of Supreme Lord, and they also teach others how to follow the teachings of the Supreme Lord. So these are Mahajans. By their own example, they follow that and they teach others. So Shiva is one of them. And that's the reason, Lord Shiva is also instructing pure devotional service to different types of personalities. You know, if you read Bhagavatam, you'll understand. But at the same time, in the Bhagavatam, there is a pastime where in the Bhagavatam, Lord Shiva is affected by the Mohini Murti incarnation of the Lord. Right? Do you know this? Lord Shiva, Durvasmuni, and he's sitting with Parvati, Durvasmuni and other his associates and followers. And then, when he saw the Mohini Murti, he got completely bewildered. And he started chasing and running after Mohini Murti. And not only that, he tried to embrace her. And at the same time, he also distrusts him. At that moment, Mohini Murti disappeared. And the Lord was completely bewildered. So when all these, all his followers, when they saw Lord Shiva in this state, they became very perplexed. And they were completely shocked. But Lord Shiva, when coming back to his senses, he was, rather than being disgusted or feeling disappointed, he was very happy. Why? Because he understood that this is the supreme glory of my Lord. And he was praising the glory of the Lord that, can you all see how great is my Supreme Lord? That my Supreme Lord has such power that can bewilder me also. So he was very happy being a pure devotee of the Lord. So you will find different types of states of Lord Shiva in the material world when the pastimes of the Lord are happening. Okay. And that's the reason sometimes he is behaving as if he is unaffected by the modes, like a Vishnu Tattva, and sometimes he behaves as if he is affected by the modes, like a Jiva Tattva. So that's the reason Lord Shiva Tattva or Shiva Tattva is actually complex to understand. Okay, and another thing is that there have been fights also between Shiva and Krishna. We have, you must have read Krishna book, or you must have heard that there was battle between Krishna and Manasur, and then Shiva protected, and then even if you remember the destruction of Kashi, so that demon Sudakshina was trying to destroy Krishna, and he took support of help of Shiva, and so then Krishna became very angry with Shiva, and so there was a fight between Krishna and Shiva, and so this happened two times, couple of times. So then Krishna also tried to save Shiva couple of times from demons. So all these pastimes happened, and that's why you can get bewildered about Shiva's character, that sometimes he is acting like this, sometimes he is acting like that. And that's the reason Shiv Tattva is a bit complex to understand, because he is taking both roles according to time, place, circumstance. Now Brahma, because he is a Jeev Tattva, that's why it's very easy for Brahma to get bewildered. Okay? Because he is a Jeev Tattva. So, so Brahma, you know, also started running after his own daughter. That also is there in the Bhagavatam, and he got bewildered. And Brahma has got bewildered in Brahma Vimohan Leela also. Right? In a couple of occasions he got bewildered from Krishna. So why I am explaining this? Because here it is mentioned that no one can understand Krishna. And that's the reason when it is difficult to understand Shiva, what to speak of Lord Shiva being, you know, able to understand Krishna. Because even Shiva can get bewildered. So then what to speak of other demigods? Okay. So is this clear now? I hope you are able to follow and understand what is the meaning of Shiv Tattva and how a Shiv Tattva is a bit complicated to understand. At the same time, the Guru Tattva is also very complex to understand, because the Guru Tattva has, you know, so why it is complex to understand, can anyone tell? You know, with the in the direction of how we are explaining Shiv Tattva, can someone also explain or guess why Guru Tattva is also complicated?
Is it because Prabhuji, he's close to the God as a representative of God, at the same time it is a Jiva Tattva?
Okay, so see, basically the Guru Tattva, now Guru Tattva can be anyone. See, that is the reason that Guru Tattva is actually very complicated, because a Guru Tattva can be Krishna himself, he can be Balram, he can be Shiva, he can be Brahma, he can be Narada, he can be Jivas like us, anyone. So the Guru Tattva, or the that particular designation, it is taking the post of all these characters. See, now Shiv Tattva, there is only one Shiv Tattva. There is only a unique character. Vishnu Tattva means, you know, obviously all the Vishnus, they are just one single character. Like you can say that they have one characteristics. Krishna also is one. But the problem with Guru Tattva is the Guru Tattva can take all these multiple roles. And at the same time, it is also complicated, because we say that the Guru is not different from Lord. And he is also different at the same time. And then another thing is that Guru can be many. So you have your, you know, Diksha Guru, you have your Siksha Guru, and then you have your Founder Acharya. So multiple, so many multiple positions that Guru is taking, that Tattva is taking. And then another complex thing to understand about Guru Tattva is that who is the Guru? So in one particular lecture, I think Prabhupada says that Guru is actually a principle. It is not the body. It is not the form. So do you understand what does it mean? That this Guru is a Tattva, or it's a principle. It is not a body. So what is the meaning of this? What is the meaning of this? When we say that Guru is not the body.
Is it supposed to be the substance that we are getting as a part of a message from Guru? Is it in the form?
Yeah, it is. It is actually the eternal Vani of the Supreme Lord, which is manifesting in different personalities. So you have one. See, that's the reason we had a discussion one time in the class about, okay, you know, let's say you have a Guru. You have a Guru, and he is probably more advanced than, you know, generally assuming that he is more advanced than you, the disciples. But the Guru, if he later on, you know, if he falls down, then does it mean that whatever bhakti that you are doing under him, it's all gone completely? It's all waste? It's all zero?
No problem.
No. So that means, you know, you are following the principle. of the guru. Principle means you are not following the body, or you are not, you know, see, you don't think, like for example, let's say Radhanath Swami Maharaj. Now he, externally he is Radhanath Swami Maharaj, but most importantly, if he is a guru for his disciples, then the message that he is transferring, the potency and the purity that he is transferring, that is actually more important than external form of the guru. Because let's say even if he does not fall down, and if he goes to the spiritual world, let's say, you know, he goes after this lifetime, he goes to the spiritual world. So then what will happen for the disciples who don't go to the spiritual world and you know, they don't complete? So then next life they will come back. So then who is going to come? Already, let's say they have taken initiation in this life, but they are not able to complete the process. Then they come back in the next lifetime. Then who is the guru? You say that, you know, guru is eternal, but then Radhanath Swami Maharaj, well, or any other guru, when he goes back to Godhead, so he's gone. So where is eternity? For you, you will accept another guru in the next life. Probably, maybe, you know, maybe his disciple or your god brother in the previous lifetime, that will become your guru in the next life, maybe. Right? So then, who is your guru?
Yeah,
so that's the reason Prabhupada says guru is a principle. So basically, that principle is actually the guru tattva. And guru tattva is, and like, you know, just as a, like, you know, we are discussing about jeev tattva, Vishnu tattva, like that. So it's a tattva which is represented by Krishna. You know, it's like, and that tattva is, you know, it exists only in the material realm, because only in the material world you need a guru to take us back to God. Once you are gone in the spiritual world, there is no Paramatma and there is no external manifestation of guru. Now, obviously we serve our leaders there, that's a different thing. But we don't train ourselves to reach perfection because we are already perfected. Right? So, guru tattva, shiv tattva, these are all complex matters, subject matters, and when we cannot understand them, what to speak, and then these personalities, they cannot understand the Supreme Lord, they get bewildered. So then, that's the reason what to speak of ordinary living entities. So all these demigods, they actually cannot understand Krishna. So is this clear now?
Yes, Prabhuji.
Yeah, because that's the reason Krishna says, neither the host of demigods nor the great sages know my origin or opulences. Okay, and only by the mercy of the Lord, one can actually understand his appearances to the degree he reveals himself. Right? Okay, any other devotees, they have any comment, question? Neeraj Prabhu? Neeraj Prabhu, are you there?
Hare Krishna Prabhuji, yes, I am here.
Okay, okay. You have any question?
No, Prabhuji, I don't have any question.
Okay. All right, so let us move on. Anyone else has joined? Ujjala Mataji, will you be able to read? Okay. Anyone else? They have not read. Where is Rajiv Prabhu?
He is not yet back from work, Prabhu.
Okay. So 10.3. Yoma majam anadim cha veti loka maheshwaram asamamudda sa marteshu sarva papa pramuchyate. He who knows me as the unborn, as the beginningless, as the Supreme Lord of all the Lords, he only undiluted among men, is freed from all sins. As stated in the 7th chapter, Manushanam Sahasresu Kasti Jadaji Siddhaye, those who are trying to elevate themselves to the platform of spiritual realization are not ordinary men. They are superior to millions and millions of ordinary men who have no knowledge of spiritual realization. But out of those actually trying to understand their spiritual position or situation, one who can come to the understanding that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the proprietor of everything, the unborn, is the most successful spiritually realized person. In that stage only, when one has fully understood Krishna's supreme position, can one be free completely from sinful reactions. Here the Lord is described by the word Aja, meaning unborn, but he is distinct from the living entities who are described in the second chapter as Aja. The Lord is different from the living entities who are taking birth and dying due to material attachment. The conditioned souls are changing their bodies, but his body is not changeable. Even when he comes to the material world, he comes as the same unborn. Therefore, in the fourth chapter, it is said that the Lord, by his internal potency, is not under the inferior material energy, but is always in the superior energy. In this verse, the words Veti Loka Maheshwaram indicate that one should know that Lord Krishna is the supreme proprietor of the planetary systems of the universe. He was existing before the creation and he is different from his creation. All the demigods were created within this material world, but as far as Krishna is concerned, it is said that he is not created. Therefore, Krishna is different even from the great demigods like Brahma and Shiva. And because the creator of Brahma, Shiva and all the demigods, he is the supreme person of all planets. Sri Krishna is therefore different from everything that is created. And anyone who knows him as such immediately becomes liberated from all sinful reactions. One must be liberated from all sinful activities to be in the knowledge of the Supreme Lord. Only by devotional service can he be known and not by any other means, as stated in the Bhagavad Gita. One should not try to understand Krishna as a human being. As stated previously, only a foolish person thinks him to be a human being. This is again expressed here in a different way. A man who is not foolish, who is intelligent enough to understand the constitutional position of the Godhead, is always free from all sinful reactions. If Krishna is known as the son of Devaki, then how can he be unborn? That is also explained in Srimad Bhagavatam. When he appeared before Devaki and Vasudeva, he was not born as an ordinary child. He appeared in his original form and then he transformed himself into ordinary child. Anything done under the direction of Krishna is transcendental. It cannot be contaminated by material reactions, which may be auspicious or inauspicious. The conception that there are things auspicious and inauspicious in the material world is more or less a mental concoction, because there is nothing auspicious in the material world. Everything is inauspicious because the very material nature is inauspicious. We simply imagine it to be auspicious. Real auspiciousness depends on activities in Krishna consciousness in full devotion and service. Therefore, if we all want our activities to be auspicious, then we should work under the direction of the Supreme Lord. Such directions are given in authoritative scriptures such as Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita, or from bona fide spiritual master. Because the spiritual master is the representative of the Supreme Lord, his direction is directly the direction of the Supreme Lord. The spiritual master, saintly person, and scripture is described in the same way. There is no contradiction in these three sources. All actions under such direction are free from the reactions of pious or impious activities of this material world. The transcendental attitude of the devotee in the performance of activities is actually that of renunciation, and this is called sannyas. As stated in the first verse of the sixth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, one who acts as a matter of duty, but because he has been ordered by the Supreme Lord, and who does not seek shelter in the fruits of activities, is a true renouncer. Anyone acting under the direction of the Supreme Lord is actually a sannyasi and yogi, and not the man who has simply taken the dress of sannyasi or judo yogi. Okay, some interesting points in this purpose. First of all, if Krishna is unborn and he is only existing in the beginning, does it mean that the living entities and all other, the material world, the spiritual world, it's not eternal and it's not existing? So does it mean then, you know, the associates of the Lord, they are also not existing in the beginning? Only Krishna is existing?
Krishna said in the first chapter there was never a time that we all never existed.
Yeah, good. Okay, good point. So now, so are we existing also eternally? Then why it is mentioned that only Krishna was there in the beginning?
That you will explain to me.
Okay. Any other devotee?
Prabhuji, once you mentioned that this is the concept that's difficult to understand or difficult to even explain.
sorry, this is?
This particular phenomena of the relative existence of the jivas with respect to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, if something is a mystery, and there is no answer for it.
Well, no, for this there is an answer. And the answer is that when it is mentioned in the Shastra that Krishna alone exists, so actually, obviously, when we talk about Krishna existing, and when we specifically talk about a personality of Godhead being existing, now how do you discriminate between a person and something which is impersonal? How do you discriminate? What is the main characteristics of that discrimination?
Person as a form, while the impersonal doesn't have form.
Okay, and so when you talk about a personality, obviously there is a form, but then, okay, so does it mean that Krishna is like a box? The box is a form, it has a shape. But then what else? What more?
Like the Chaitanya means it is a living entity, right?
He is a living entity, which means what? The main discriminating point is energy, the Shakti. So see, that is the difference between the impersonalist and the personalist. That the personalist, they say that the Lord exists along with his Shaktis. And the impersonalist, they say that the Lord does not have Shaktis. Because everything is one. Okay, so the Lord, when we say that Krishna existed in the beginning, so it is actually, it's obvious that he existed along with his Shaktis. And that Shakti means internal energy, basically. Okay, now, that marginal energy, it's not manifested in the material world. Because the material creation is not created yet. See, the material creation is also eternal. And eternal in the sense that it is created, it is annihilated, in that sense. But it appears and disappears. So, it appears and disappears, and that's why it is temporary. But that cycle is eternal. Okay. And that's the reason when Krishna is existing in the beginning, it means he is existing with his associates, paraphernalia, abode, everything. So that is internal energy of the Lord. That comes, that belongs to the internal energy because it's an expansion of Lord Balram. And Balram is the expansion of Krishna, and then Radharani is internal energy of the Lord. So all these energies, they are assumed to be with Krishna. And it is said that it is in the beginning. Now, what is basically meant is that from a creational point of view, from a material point of view, the Lord is only one who is in the beginning. So it does not mean that the spiritual world is not there, and the associate of Lord not there in the spiritual world, and he is only alone, and at some point of time the spiritual world is created. No. When we say that Krishna is existing, we are referring to Krishna along with his internal energy that is always eternal. Okay, but when we say that only Krishna existed from a material context, it means that he existed in the beginning because there was no material creation. There were no material elements. The jivas were not manifested in the material world. And as we discussed that, what is the position of Krishna? What is the position of Shiva? And what is the position of Brahma? You see, the Shambhu in the material world is a Shiv Tattva. And his expansion is one of the Guna Avatars in the material world, along with Brahma and Vishnu. Now, Vishnu is the we say that Vishnu is the maintainer of the more the, you know, of the, he maintains everything in the material world. So Vishnu, that Vishnu is actually the Shirodakashaya Vishnu, the super soul, the Paramatma feature. He is the maintainer. But above him is Garbhodakashaya Vishnu. And above Garbhodakashaya Vishnu is Shirodakashaya Vishnu. Karanodakashaya Vishnu, who is Mahavishnu. Now, up till Mahavishnu, because Mahavishnu is lying in the causal Viraj Ocean. So this Viraj Ocean is actually the border between the material and spiritual world. And this material creation is also eternal in the sense that it lies in the seed form, in the form of pradhan. So, but it is not manifested. Okay, and when Mahavishnu from the causal ocean, when he glances over this Pradhan with the influence of time, then this Pradhan manifests in the realms of Mahatattva. Mahatattva is actually the manifestation of the material elements. All these material elements, they come into manifested state. Okay, like for Pradhan is what? Like for example, if you have a car and you have dismantled the car completely. Okay, so Pradhan is like that dismantled form of the car. And Mahatattva means when someone comes and when a person starts assembling the parts. So that is called as, you know, glancing of Mahavishnu, where the action has taken place. The influence of the time has agitated the Pradhan, and because of the agitation, that Pradhan is finally manifested into Mahatattva with all the material elements, 24 material elements. So when you assemble all these parts together, then you get the entire car. So that car is actually the Mahatattva manifestation of the Pradhana in the seed form. Okay, so the Pradhana is also eternal, but nothing is there in the material creation still. The material creation is vacant. See, now when Mahavishnu is glancing over the material, the causal ocean, then pores they emanate from the body of Mahavishnu. From the pores, the universes, they emanate from the pores of the body of Mahavishnu. And these universes, they are like bubble form, in the spherical globe form. So they start floating on the universe, in the causal ocean. On the top of causal ocean, they start floating. And each and every universe, after Mahavishnu glances over Pradhan, then this manifestation of material world takes place. But before that, everything is hidden. Now, what is the role of Shiva and Brahma here? The Shiva and Brahma, they come into the picture when the material world is created. Or when Mahavishnu, when he starts glancing, that time Shambhu, he takes that role. And he's the one who, with his trident, because the trident indicates past, present and future. So he is the one who is actually carrying out the task of Mahavishnu, and he is the one who is actually inspiring the jivas to come out from the Pradhan and go into the material world. Okay, so the role of Shambhu in the material world is also corresponding to the creation aspect of the material universe. So now Shambhu is coming into picture at the time of creation. But you see, Krishna is always right, at the top, like he is always there. Even if there is no creation, Krishna is always there. So in that sense, it is mentioned that Krishna does not have any beginning. He is the only person who is there in the beginning. Shiva and Brahma are not. And then we know that how Brahma is coming. Brahma is coming from the navel of Garbhodakashaya Vishnu. And then how Garbhodakashaya Vishnu is coming from where and what time? Garbhodakashaya Vishnu only comes into picture when the universes are emanating from the pores of Mahavishnu. Right? Because we know that Garbhodakashaya Vishnu is present in each and every universe. So without Garbhodakashaya Vishnu, there is no question of Brahma. And then without glancing of Mahavishnu, there is no question of Garbhodakashaya Vishnu being manifested. And there is no question of Shambhu being, taking that position and role. Okay. So in that context, it is mentioned, like in the context of the material creation, Krishna has no beginning. He is always there. So is this clear now?
Very complicated.
Unless if you see that Goloka chart seminar, then you will understand actually many things. You have to see those videos. If you want to understand Bhagavatam, especially the fifth canto, the creation, the sub-creation, all these things, you have to see these videos. So there is one Goloka chart video, which I have already sent, and another one is the Vedic cosmology that you should see. If you see these videos, then many things will be clear.
Can you explain, Prabhuji, again, because I lost you in between, the creation of the Mahatattva and then Pradhan, and whatever my heart, my head is telling me. When Vishnu, who glances at the Pradhana, then the seed form, and then Mahatattva develops, and then Mahatattva activated the soul. Circling around with the concepts and have no idea what was there.
So you are unable to understand what is all this happening?
The sequence that you mentioned, I just lost.
Okay, so I will repeat the sequence. See, there is this, the pradhana is also eternal. Because the pradhana is an unmanifested state of the mahatattva or the external material material things that you see with the naked eyes, okay, or the universe.
In the first place,
Pradhan. Pradhana means the unmanifested seed form. Okay,
Pradhana means unmanifested seed form of jiva?
No. See, I will tell you. The jivas are also there in the Pradhan. That's another thing. Okay, the jiva and the material elements, they are all, because what happens, see, Mahavishnu, you know, his body has the jivas. When Mahavishnu glances over Pradhan, he is actually impregnating the Pradhan with jivas. So just for example, you can consider this example that Pradhan is like a mother and Mahavishnu is like father. So when the father impregnates the mother, then in the womb of the mother, the child is born, right? So because all the jivas, they are lying in the body of Mahavishnu, when Mahavishnu glances over Pradhan to agitate Pradhan, so now this does not happen directly. It happens through Shambhu. It happens through Ramadevi, and then Ramadevi will transfer that, you know, potency to Shambhu and Durga, okay? And they are the ones who actually they contact the Pradhana, because Pradhana is actually material element. It's unmanifested state of material element. So then, when the father glances...
One thing, we will sorry to interrupt you, but the question I have, when you say the Pradhana gets impregnated by Mahavishnu in the presence of Shambhu, right? But Shambhu bonds only after the Brahma gets manifested in the material world, in the first place.
No. See, this Shambhu, as I said earlier, this Shambhu is at the time of Mahavishnu. Now, Mahavishnu is before the material universe. Brahma comes into picture after the material universe. And so, okay, so what happens is, you have the Garbhodakashayi Vishnu in the each and every universe. And from when Garbhodakashayi Vishnu enters each and every universe, from his left arm, Vishnu appears, and from his right arm, Brahma appears. Okay, so which are these Brahma and Vishnu? This Vishnu is basically Shirodakashayi Vishnu, or the Super Soul, the third Purusha Avatar, which is present in each and everyone's heart as Super Soul. And this Brahma is actually the Hiranyagarbha Brahma, which is the golden egg of the universe. Okay, and which is a different Brahma. It is not the same Brahma. So now the Brahma that is coming from the navel of Vishnu is the expansion of this Hiranyagarbha. Okay, so now what happens? We know that when Brahma is taking birth, then, you know, he becomes angry because the four Kumaras, they do not agree with the instructions of Brahma. They do not follow his instruction. And he gets angry, and then in that anger, Lord Shiva is born. So that Shiva, which is appearing after Brahma's anger, is actually the Shiva who is in charge of mode of ignorance in the material world. And that Shiva is expansion of that Shambhu. So now do you understand? So Shambhu is appearing before Brahma, when the material universe is not even created.
Okay.
So that's why that Shambhu is superior to that. See, although Shiva is appearing from the anger of Brahma, but that is happening afterwards, you know, after Shambhu's appearance in the causal ocean or in the Mahakal Dham. So Shambhu has his abode in the causal ocean and it is called the Mahakal Dham. Now this Shambhu, as I said earlier, it is an expansion of Sadashiv. This is Sadashiv, is a Vishnu Tattva in Vaikuntha planet. So when you come below Vaikuntha, you have the Viraja river. And when you come below Viraja, you cross River Raj, then you enter into the material universe. So this material universe is like a globe. It's like a bubble. Okay, and in that bubble, and that bubble is covered with this, you know, the eight elements. The earth, water, fire, air, you know, all these five gross elements and three subtle elements. And then inside this bubble, Garbhodaka Sai Vishnu is lying down with causal with the Garbhodaka ocean below this Garbhodaka Sai Vishnu. And from the top of that, you know, from the navel of that Vishnu, Brahma is manifesting. Okay, and from that anger of Brahma, that Rudra or Shiva is manifesting. This Shiva is actually the expansion of that Shiv Tattva. Okay, so now you see what is the position of Shambhu and what is the position of Brahma. So Brahma is only coming into picture when the universe is actually being manifested, is created. But Shambhu is there, right there, before the appearance of the creation of the universe. Right, he is assisting in the creation of the universe, in fact.
So is this clear now? Prabhuji, when Mahavishnu impregnates the Pradhana, which
yeah,
is...
Yeah, so now, okay, so, okay, let me just explain this. Now, when Mahavishnu is glancing on Pradhana, so that glance, that time, Shambhu is the one who is actually interfering, or he is taking that service, and he is actually carrying the jiva into the pradhana. So he is the one who is in touch with pradhana, because pradhana is material element. Okay, and so Shiva, this Shambhu and Durga, they are the ones who are actually handling all these things, because they are the ones now who will be bringing the material jiva, the living entities, into the universe. So now what happens? When Garbhodaka Sai Vishnu enters each and every universe, so that Garbhodaka Sai Vishnu will carry some parts of jivas into one particular universe. Because we know that each and every universe, there are Garbhodaka Sai Vishnus. There are unlimited universes, unlimited Garbhodaka Sai Vishnu. And unlimited jivas, they are all divided into these unlimited universes. So a group of jivas will be carried by Garbhodaka Sai Vishnu to one universe. Another group will be carried to another universe, like that. So that division happens like that. So this Pradhana has the jivas also, when Mahavishnu glances over the Pradhana. So that time, these jivas, they are transferred to the Pradhan. And that's by Garbhodaka Sai Vishnu's and by Shambhu's, this thing, you know, they are brought into the material universes. So, is this
material universe was not there, right? Until Mahavishnu glances Pradhana.
Yes, yes, exactly.
Mahavishnu glances Pradhana.
See, how can material universe be there when it is in the unmanifested form? Simple. You don't have the car unless you assemble it. So, without the agitation by the glance of Mahavishnu, there is no question of Pradhana transforming itself into Mahatattva.
Correct. So what I understand, Prabhuji, that Durga Mata and the Shambhu helps to transfer the jivas, which are the spiritual element in the body of Mahavishnu. Then it transfers those jivas to the Pradhana, which is the material element, and impregnates the material element with those jivas. And with the glance of Mahavishnu and help of Shambhu and Durga Mata, the Pradhana gets impregnated with this jivas. And then after, with that impregnation, the Garbhodakshi, then how come the Garbhodakshi Vishnu develops? So it is coming out of Mahavishnu by itself?
Yeah, so that Garbhodakshi Vishnu is an expansion of Mahavishnu. Because, see, Mahavishnu is a sum total super soul. See, now these are three forms of Paramatma. Mahavishnu, Karanadakshi Vishnu is same as Mahavishnu. Then Garbhodakshi Vishnu, and then Shirodaka Shai Vishnu. So, see, okay, so now, okay, the universe, although the universes are coming, but then what is giving life to the universe? It is actually the Vishnu's presence. See, just as we, who is giving life to us? It is because of the presence of the Super Soul in every living entity's heart. So similarly, what is giving life to the universes? And that is because of the presence of Vishnu in each and every universe. So what is, which is that Vishnu? It is the Garbhodaka Shai Vishnu. That's why he is the Super Soul of individual universes. Okay, and then Shirodaka Shai Vishnu or the Paramatma is a Super Soul for each and every living entity in each and every living in the universe. So that Shirodaka Shai Vishnu is, as we said earlier, that it is also coming from Garbhodaka Shai Vishnu. So that is expansion of Garbhodaka Shai Vishnu. Okay, so Mahavishnu expanding himself to Garbhodaka Shai Vishnu, entering each and every universe, and then Garbhodaka Shai Vishnu expanding himself in the form of Shirodaka Shai Vishnu in each and every living entity's heart, in each and every atom in the universe. So is this clear now?
So yeah, so once the jiva has got, once the pradhana gets impregnated by jivas, then those jivas, then where is the mahatattva from?
See, mahatattva is the material element, the gross body, the subtle body, the ten acquiring senses. Then together with mind intelligence and false ego. And the Mahatattva. So these are four elements. And then the 10 knowledge acquiring senses, the 10, knowledge acquiring and then working senses. Yeah. So these are 20. 20 plus 4 become 24 elements. So these are all actually the Mahatattva. Okay. So Mahatattva basically the material elements which a jiva requires to enjoy in the material world.
So Mahatattva also emanates from Pradhana?
That is the manifested state of Pradhana. When Pradhana is agitated, see, when you agitate something, it explodes. Right? When it explodes, then it will be divided into elements. So like that.
Okay.
So it's in the seed form. Pradhana is the seed form, unmanifested form. When it is agitated by Mahavishnu's glance, then it explodes. And it converts into Mahatattva, like that.
Okay, okay. So, correct me.
When there is annihilation, there is complete reversal of process, which means the Mahatattva will enter into Pradhana. So, Pradhana, the entire Mahatattva will become seed form.
Okay.
Right? Like that, yeah. So, each and every material element will start merging into each other. It's a reverse process. Okay. So, Mahatattva comes, then the false ego comes, Ahankara. Then through Ahankara, Ahankara creates these different types of knowledge acquiring senses, working senses, and so then earth, water, ether, fire, all these things will come that will envelop the universe. So when annihilation takes place, all these processes will start merging on each other, and they will become Pradhana.
Back to the Mahavishnu.
Huh?
Back to the Pradhana in seed form, and then again the Shambhu and the Durga will help to bring that jiva back to Mahavishnu,
yeah. Right? So what I would suggest to you is, you have got some understanding now, but it's very, very highly recommended that you all should see those videos and many things will be clear. Okay. Otherwise, there will be a lot of doubts and confusions because there are certain things in the Bhagavatam you will not be able to understand. Like, for example, the Varshas that we're talking about, then the Bhagavatam mentioning about the Himalayas, then the Bhagavatam mentioning about Dhruv Maharaj going to the Himalayas and fighting the Yakshas, but this is not talking about the Himalayas in the Bharata that we know, or the earth that we know. But this is Himalaya Mountains, which is the border of Bharat Varsha and Kimpurusha Varsha. It is not our Himalayas. It is Himalayas in Jambudip, okay, which is a border. So, and then if you all remember, Durvasa Muni, he went to Vaikuntha to see Vishnu because he offended Ambarish Maharaj. So he ran to Vishnu to seek forgiveness, but Vishnu did not forgive him and he asked him to go back to Dhruva Ambarish Maharaj. So that Vaikuntha is not the Vaikuntha that we are referring, of the spiritual world. Now there are Vaikunthas in the material world also, inside the material world, in that globe, inside the globe which, you know, we're talking about, the universe is emanating from Mahavishnu, and that those are circular in shape, spherical in shape, and those globes, and inside the globe we know that Garbhodaya Sai Vishnu is there, and then the stem of the lotus flower is there. The stem of the lotus flower is representing the 14th planetary system. Brahma is coming, is at the top. So below, all the 14 planetary systems are there. But above Brahma, there is one local Vaikuntha planet like Dhruv Loka. We know that Dhruv Loka is also Vaikuntha in the material world. So similarly, there is another Vaikuntha also in the material world, which is above Satyaloka. And so when you know, we say that the Bhrigu Muni, you know, when he kicked the pest of Vishnu, so he did not go to Vaikuntha in the spiritual world. He went to Vaikuntha in the material world, which is there in the material world. And similarly, Durvas Muni also went in the material world, Vaikuntha in the material world. Okay, so if you see these videos, if you see and understand, then Bhagavatam will be very clear. Otherwise, difficult. It's extremely difficult to imagine and to think about all these things.
Prabhuji, where can I find the videos? Is there a link that you can send us?
I had already, if you remember, a long time back, you know, I had sent this link, Goloka chart and Vedic cosmology. But I can send again. I will send again. So you all can see this video. Okay.
Okay, Prabhuji. We'll see that video, and then if any question, we'll come to you.
Yeah, sure. Okay, so any other devotees, they have any question? I think maybe some of you are probably confused or you're not probably able to collect this information or, you know, relate this information because maybe you are not aware of certain things. So I don't know what is the situation of other devotees. But I would strongly suggest that each and every devotee should watch these videos, Goloka chart and Vedic cosmology. Okay. Any comments? Yeah, I mean, you will be surprised to know that there is so much information in our Vedic scriptures, and to such an accurate degree, and so detailed, like you just think that, you know, this material world is sufficient for our understanding. Why do we have to do anything with spiritual world? The material world has so many things. You know, it is so many details are given in not only in the Bhagavatam but in the other scriptures also about the material universe itself, what to speak of the spiritual world. So that's the reason you will not find any other scripture in the entire universe like our Vedic scriptures. Because none of the other religions, they have any source of information. Okay. Okay, all right. So let us stop now. Next week. Next week, Saturday, January. Okay, 5th. Yeah, we have Rath Yatra festival here. So, I think we will have the class on Sunday then, 6th. So I hope that devotees can attend on Sunday. Okay. Okay, so thank you all the devotees for joining. Hare Krishna, Dhanva Pranam.
Hare Krishna, Prabhuji. Thank you very much.
Hare Krishna, Prabhuji. Dhanva Pranam.